Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I am your host, Colin Dams, back with a working microphone this time, and joined once again by Nathan Heitschel and Polly Questel. What is up, boys?
Oh, hey, girl.
I'm COVID negative.
Hell yeah. Good job.
I didn't really think I had COVID, but the doctor swindled me into a test and negative.
That's good. So you'll be fit for Newcastle then on Saturday.
Yeah, I will be. I'll be
just stay away from the Portuguese national team for a little bit.
Yeah, well, maybe we should have the Portuguese national team stay away from us.
Yeah, more on that later. But Manchester United coming back from an unfortunately timed, prolonged and poorly played out international break.
It was the right time. I'm going to go with it was probably the right time for international break.
I'll let you explain that one.
I just think, like, I mean, it's poor for us to it's poor for us because there's nothing new. So, like, there's nothing moving the needle, and you're left to just sit and dwell and harp on this game. It's good for,
right.
You know, it's good for the coaches because they could, you know, actually take the time. Look at the schedule, what it's been this year, and what it's going to be. You have basically weekend, midweek. So, you know, now the coaches get a chance to really look not just at the Tottenham game, but at the Brighton game and the Crystal Palace game and say, okay, what's been going wrong and where do we fix this? A lot of your players get to, you know, get out and, you know, like Rashford and Fernandes and Pogba and you know, yeah, like, so your Mason Greenwoods have to dwell on this while they're still at Carrington, but like the rest of them get out and they go be with their national team. It's a different players, different coaches, different feel, different atmospheres. Refreshes your brain, recharges the batteries a bit, gets you into a different, you know, maybe helps you find your form because none of them have it currently.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would like it better if this was the first international break, where the one that happened right before the start of the season maybe didn't occur and they waited until now to try and start, you know, re-upping these fixtures. But I agree. It definitely seemed like our Manchester United players needed a mental reset. Do you think that all of them got that necessarily? Because even, you
hell
know,
no!
I mean, Harry Maguire, namely, has not looked great and got a red card with two pretty boneheaded yellow cards against Denmark, and is probably not a distraction that he needed after one his start to the season, but, you know, as well his, you know, lacking of a vacation.
I mean, he's got Harry Redknapp in his camp, so he's fine.
Right. Man, are you gonna,
I mean, I don't see the red card as being a distraction, but, like, you know, the media is going to harp on it and the fans are
right.
Going to harp on it and everything. And then there's going to be more mental toll taken on him. And I wrote about this, you know, after the Tottenham game. I think he needed to, you know, withdraw from the England team. And, you know, I'm not one that says, like, oh, we should always be withdrawing from national teams. I understand the players are honored to be on the national team, and they want to do that. Like, last year in September, when Rashford was playing, and he got called into the England camp, and I said, this is really – and, like, he got hurt against West Ham and was probably mm-hmm. against Arsenal, and he wasn't himself against Newcastle, and everybody's like, he should take a break. And I was like – On the contrary, I was like, right now he's been playing with Andreas Pereira and Daniel James, and you know, he should go to the England camp and play with Kane and Sterling and Sancho and get his groove back. And, like, hopefully he scores a goal and then comes back and take. And that's exactly what happened. He scored a goal for England. He came back. He scored against Liverpool, and all of a sudden he hit form.
Right.
Excuse me. Maguire, I think, was the opposite. Like, I said, I think he just needs a mental break, and I thought he should have withdrawn from the England squad and taken a week to 10 days just completely off, come back to Carrington, not play against Newcastle, and, you know, you could go with Bailly and Lindelof. The two of them they've only played together eight times in a back – like, they've played once in a back three, and against PSG, Bailly played the first 30 minutes as a right back in the famous game in Paris. But Ollie yanked him.
By the way, Eric Bailly not injured as severely as was previously thought. Yeah.
So they've only played together 8 times. They don't have a great record, but 7 of those games were in 2018-19 where, like, United, you know, you could say, like, well, they concede a lot of goals, and maybe that's an indictment on the two of them. But no matter who United put back out there that year, like, they conceded goals. So I think you could have let them play against Newcastle and then assess where you are for PSG and give Maguire, like, that 10-day break that he desperately needs, because footballers in general, at the end of a season, like, it's such a mental strain on them. We heard Scott Parker talk about it when Fulham were promoted, how he said, like, I'm very happy because, like, I could take some time to enjoy this. Normally, like, you win on Saturday and you take a few hours to enjoy it, spend some time with your family, and then, like, by the time you wake up Sunday morning, you're already worried about the next game. And he's like, and it's just, it's such a mental, so footballers in general, they need that time to go at the end of the season and switch off and not focus on football and not focus on anything. And that's what Maguire was doing. And then a very traumatizing life situation happened to him. So, like, he may not be thinking about football, but the stress and the mental strain was still very much there. So his brain, his, you know, his psyche never got that vacation that he needed.
Right. And of course, he's been the discussion in the English press, but one of the things that comes along with the international break is also all of these players go out and start talking to press all over the world. Not necessarily within the, you know, constraints of traveling with your club. Nathan, do you think that some of these comments that have, you know, come out about Bruno and his potential clash with Ollie, which, by the way, Bruno kind of dispelled those rumors and said that there is not a problem between the two of them at all, but this kind of added distraction of the international break, do you think it is damaging to our hopes against Newcastle this weekend?
I mean, it started off weird because you had Pogba, who was inevitably asked about Real Madrid, and he inevitably commented on it, and so...
No, that story kind of went away pretty quickly, though. That's shocking.
Yeah, because Harry Maguire was like, you know, hold my door.
Yeah, because that's what a captain...
yeah, I'll tell you what. Just going off of Polly's point for a second, I feel like Harry Maguire just, you know, he needs to get away, maybe go to a nice sandy beach, maybe, I don't know, off the coast of Greece or something, and just cool off for a little bit and get his head right, you know? I think that would be really beneficial. But no, it's, as far as the international break is concerned, I don't necessarily think that media stories are going to cause problems. I think it's just going to be a chemistry thing of, you know, what's going to be the look of our back line. These new guys that we bought, are they coming in? How are they going to, you know, feature? Are they coming off the bench? I would think that we probably won't see Alex Telles start. Cavani's not available. So that's the stuff that I think would be more likely to affect the team over Newcastle. I wouldn't even say Maguire getting a red card, because once again, that's for England. That's not for Manchester United. Like, granted, he's
I can weigh on his head though. Like,
yeah, it is a shoddy run of form.
Bouncing my way right now.
A head that already weighs a ton.
The Pogba stuff, I'm not concerned about. The Bruno stuff, I'm not concerned, especially not the Bruno stuff. Because the hype train was, like, off the rails last year, and I still felt like he performed pretty well. So I think when he's on the pitch, he stays pretty level as far as, like, outside stuff probably not affecting him too much, so I'm not concerned about that. I'm just really concerned about, honestly, the Longstaff brothers. So
yes, confirmed that Matty Longstaff.
The Bruno stuff is the biggest crock of shit I've ever seen in my life, and you know where it came from. We know where it came from, and it's disgusting because it came from the club. Because we know this, because the story dropped last week, and it was, there was a dust-up between Bruno and Maguire at halftime, and that's why Solskjaer subbed him out, and he told Maguire and the rest of the players, you're not fit to wear the shirt, and what did it do? It was, you know, the fan base around, oh, well, this is why, you know, Bruno, he should be our captain, which, by the way, like, that's not something a captain would do. That's very non-captain like of him. You cannot tell Harry Maguire, who has played like every minute of the season, et cetera, he's not fit to wear a shirt, like to wear the United shirt. You could tell him, hey, get your head out of your ass. You're playing like shit and we need you to be better. And in turn, Maguire will look at Bruno and be like, you get your head out of your ass because you're also playing like crap. And that will spark a dust up.
To be fair, that's what it sounds like actually happened, not the you're not fit to wear the badge.
And that's, you know, fine, commentary. Because that happens all the time. That happens with players all the time, and you want that. But they put that out there, and Bruno quickly, I mean, Bruno's camp quickly was like, that's all a load of crap. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, they put the same story breaks, except this time Harry Maguire's name doesn't get mentioned, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's does. So it was basically, like, to me, and again, everybody rallies around Bruno. And to me, it's just the club is looking at, you know, we already saw them drop these Pochettino stories, and that got the fan base going, well, yeah, like, pull the trigger now. The club is basically trying to, like, they're looking at what happened with Mourinho and Pogba and being like, well, the fans all rallied around our player, our star player. And so when we chose the player over the coach, it worked, like we were backed in that decision. And it seems like they're trying to create a rift now between the player and the coach so that when they, like, if things don't improve and they try to change the coach, it'll be a popular decision. Like, they're trying to create that same situation. Because, like, think about it. If it was Paul Pogba blowing up at his teammates, what would the reaction be?
Right.
It would not.
This is what we saw 2 years ago. I mean, there was the poor performance against Southampton, you know, coming they were back on it.
But the difference is that, like, at that point, everybody was like, you don't get rid of Paul Pogba. Like, he was coming off the World Cup. He was playing really well that season. And then when Mourinho gets sacked and he goes on a tremendous run, that's when people are like, oh, he was downing tools to get Mourinho fired. And then he goes on that international break, says the comments about Real Madrid, and comes back and doesn't play as well. And everybody's like, oh, he was downing tools again. And everybody then last year was like, he's faking an injury. So in that regard, like, if it was Paul Pogba yelling at the team, you don't deserve to wear the shirt and everybody, like, the fans would not be taking his side. You know that.
Yeah.
And if Pogba was the one, like, yelling at Solskjaer, the fans would not be taking Pogba's side. So, like, and that should tell you a lot right there. Because also, don't forget that there were a lot of fans who, when they did fire Mourinho, were like, it's disgusting how they chose a player over the club. No player should be bigger than the club. And those same people are now basically being like, you gotta, oh, well, like, you know, this is the problem. Like, Solskjaer's holding Bruno back, and, you know, like, Pochettino's available, and it, you know, kiss the ground that Bruno walks on. You know, like, that's, you know, and that's what, so I think, like, there's an element of the club is trying to do that so that if things don't improve, they can make a move for Pochettino, and it'll be backed.
The thing about the timing of this, too, I mean, we saw Pochettino trending on Twitter, minutes after it became clear that Tottenham were going to rout us at Old Trafford. And it has kind of followed through the week. And there have been, you know, tweets from football writers saying that, you know, Manchester United are keeping tabs on him and they're aware that, or they're fully conscious that he will be available to them if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer goes on a really poor run of form. And I was listening to the Athletic's Talk of the Devils podcast. And they were talking about this poor start to the season. And in particular, they were talking about Paul Pogba, saying that Andy Mitten said that Paul Pogba is the type of player that, you know, he needs to be playing 8 or 9 out of 10 every game for Manchester United. And he's just not doing that in this poor start to the season. But I'm sitting here like, we're 3 games into the Premier League season. How are we fully measuring a run of form when we're only looking at 3 games? And I mean, removing that from the League Cup, and we're about to have Champions League coming up soon, so we need to start playing better, but it just doesn't seem like anyone has the patience to actually get something going right now. It doesn't seem like Manchester United...
Pogba takes the blame.
Yeah.
Pogba takes the blame, but like Bruno's been playing terribly too. I mean, everybody said, oh, but Bruno, like Brighton was horrific. And everybody's like, oh, you know, oh, but like, you know, it just shows his quality that he still affects the game. And it's like, okay, first of all, the player, all right, Bruno serves in a free kick. Guess who scored it? Harry Maguire. They credited it with an own goal, which I think is the most ridiculous own goal I've ever seen. Paul Pogba's goal against Brighton in the League Cup was far more of an own goal than Maguire's. And Maguire does that. Maguire wins the penalty at the end of the game that Bruno scores. And, of course, it's Maguire's playing terribly. Bruno, oh, even when he doesn't have a good game, he affects the game. Okay, Bruno kicked the ball into space. Rashford took it, somehow, like, tried to screw it. Like, you know, he had eight chances to shoot. He didn't. He finally shoots, puts it in net. Bruno gets an assist. And then Bruno buries a penalty that Maguire won. All right, but, like, we're only in that situation because Bruno gave up a penalty in the first half and then just decided not to, like, hey, here's my man. I'm going to let you run free and get a free header into the net, like, with, you know, seconds left on the clock. Like,
right. I don't know. It just seems to me that this part of the schedule has become hyper-focused and that media narratives are driving so much about the way that people see Manchester United as opposed to, you know, just letting a season happen. I mean, three games doesn't define a Premier League season.
It is, but it's not just like, it is partially because we've just looked so bad and defensively we look clueless. But like, this has been a season where anything and everything that could have gone wrong in, like, I mean, I think we said this last week, that could have gone wrong in the build-up to this season has gone wrong. You know, no preseason. Rashford skips that international break, so, like, clearly he's still injured. Harry Maguire, your captain, gets into legal trouble. Paul Pogba gets COVID. Juan Bissaka's got a quarantine. Bruno Fernandes, a week before the season, has a child, so he's probably not sleeping much. You know, no preseason thing is huge because, I mean, look at where City are. They aren't playing well. Now, like, we look more of a mess than City, but City aren't playing well. Bayern Munich, who went to the Champions League final, got destroyed by Hoffenheim and, like, had a 4-3 game against Hertha Berlin.
And Liverpool had a historic loss against Aston Villa, relegated last year.
But, like, they had a preseason, too. Like, it's, like, the teams that didn't have preseasons, like, they are struggling. But that, too, like, we lost all this time. And like, that's the other thing is we look tired, but we never had, like, you get an off season where you can rest and relax. And then what do you do in the preseason? You work on your fitness levels. We never got that opportunity. Like, that was the thing, was we Solskjaer burnt the team out in his first half a season and then said, well, next year, like, all we're going to do in preseason is work on our fitness so that we, you know, that doesn't happen again. Well, you didn't have a chance to work on it even more this summer. And nothing is happening. And like, there's a reason that like teams, that the lack of preseason where you work on your tactics and, you know, tactics are inherently defensive and organization, which is how you're going to keep the ball out of your own net. Like, the fact that we didn't have that, it's showing when United and City and Liverpool can't.
Nathan, thoughts?
I mean, yeah, we missed out on 3 months of fitness and vibes, and it's showing right now. But I mean, without like rehashing everything that we went over in the last podcast, it's just we're already in overreaction mode, which is a bummer. like we said, it was compounded by the transfer window and all the reports that have come out since then. And so I think what's going to be really important right now is, I feel like this Newcastle game is actually really important as far as trying to right the ship and maybe just like quiet some people down. And I think that having 2 weeks to prepare for it too, I don't see why Solskjaer won't have a game plan ready to go for that as well. Cause just all the things that Pauly continues to mention, they just like continue to pile on. And then the fan base is already as gross as it can possibly be already. And so we're just seeing the fruits of that labor. So I would just love to see us come out against Newcastle and smash them, like we did back in, what was it, January? That sound right? February?
It was a December game. It was
Boxing Day.
Yeah, right after Christmas. And that was, of course, the birth of the Rashford, Martial, Greenwood front three. So
yes,
hopefully a similar coming out party. But of course, Anthony Martial will not be available due to his red card against Tottenham.
Let me tell you though, the reaction.
How did they not get rescinded? Like, what's the FA doing?
I mean,
or not like reduce. I mean, I guess they ruled violent conduct and.
Yeah. Hey, English FA, if you listen to this podcast, I want you to know that you guys suck ass for that. Like, that's still the dumbest thing that has happened.
And also, if you're listening to this podcast, I have a lot of primary source documents I'd like to request from you for my academic career. Anyway, Polly.
You know, it's going to suck, like, the reaction of fans after this game, because most people aren't going to see it. Since
that's true,
you can't go and people aren't going to pay the £15 to watch it.
I mean, there are pubs they're going to, but England is going. Yeah, England's gone back into lockdown, so it's not like they can go to pubs and watch this.
For us in the US, is it going to be on the cock or
are we on the cock?
So, all right, I guess nobody's watching this game unless you got an illegal stream. Like,
I think I'm going to have to label this episode explicit if we're going to be calling Peacock the cock.
Well, I mean, haven't you ever shopped at the Teat, Colin? You live in the South.
By Monday afternoon, I watched it twice, but...
Right. But
the reaction from fans on Twitter is going to be unbearable because, like, you know that they didn't watch it.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break now, and then we're going to come back in part two and discuss the Newcastle game and your questions about it. So
yeah, we got to go sign up for free trials for the cock.
Yeah. So stay tuned. And we are back for part two. So going into this Newcastle game, some of you sent us tweets, so we're going to work that into us talking about the squad today, starting with the back four. And Polly, I believe you had an interesting tweet that was sent your way about a potential starting lineup.
Interesting is a euphemism. First, I've seen some of the dumbest starting lineup ideas in my life this week, including someone suggesting a back three of Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, and Shaw.
Nasty.
This one's up there. I would like to see Twanzebe and Lindelof as center backs with Bailly as a center defensive midfielder. He can give stability to that defensive mid position with his defensive abilities, and he is good at passing forward too. Would take away the pressure from Pogba, Fred to do defense work a lot. Worth a try. There's so much to unpack here.
Right. I mean, if
worth a try is good for the preseason.
Yeah, like worth a try. I mean,
of those three players that he mentioned, I'm just astounded that Eric Bailly is the one that he would put in defensive midfield by choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I could see Twanzebe because he's done it before.
Right.
Bailly of the three of them is the least positionally aware player and the worst passer of the three. And the most rash and erratic. Like, the last thing you want is him running around. He's also the best aerial player. So, like, you probably want him in that back four. Why, like, you want to free up Fred to do more attacking? Like, why? Fred's not good at that. You know, Fred's good at the defensive stuff. Like, I understand freeing up Pogba to do more attacking.
I mean, haven't you seen Fred shoot the ball?
Dude,
is that what he's doing?
He's a volume shooter. He has to take more shots so that way the one can go in.
No, but he actually shot well at... Again, was it Brighton in the League Cup? Like, he took a few and they all went on target. And I'm like, oh, this is new. Like,
yeah, I mean, he scored a couple against Brugge, but or maybe it wasn't Brugge. Might have been Astana.
He scored two goals in 1 year, and that was it. Like, all right, like, he's not a goal scorer, he's not a shooter, but like, he took a couple shots against Brighton, which were they were very far out. He was never going to score on them, but he whipped them in there pretty well, and on target, which for Fred is saying a lot, because, like, I'm pretty sure he had, like, 8 shots on target last year. So if he already has two this year, that's steady improvement.
But he does that from the deep, you know, collecting the ball position, which I don't think I want Eric Bailly shooting more than Fred, which I mean, the list of people I would rather have taking a shot over Fred is pretty long, but Eric Bailly is not on that list.
Correct. And I mean, Eric Bailly is not exactly great at passing forward. And yeah. Why you want him in midfield? Like, I've heard the Lindelof suggestion a lot, which is like,
that one's kind of interesting too, because like Lindelof is pretty good on the ball. And
he's good on the ball,
but
like, he's not midfielder good on the ball. Harry Maguire is midfielder good on the ball. If Harry Maguire was not 6 foot monster and like big lanky, he'd be a midfielder.
He didn't have a 50 pace rating on FIFA.
Yeah, but like Matic has the same 50 pace rating.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You could be, like, if Maguire just wasn't like, if he wasn't as big as he was, he'd be a midfielder.
But what one thing from this, though, that I do think is interesting is that I don't think the idea of Tuanzebe coming back in to start is such a bad idea if he is as healthy as Manchester United's marketing has, you know.
I agree with that, because what else do you do? But like, here's the thing. Like, I think Maguire's going to play, and I like, don't think he should. And this is where it comes to Solskjaer. Like, this is where you have to have a spine. Look, Maguire came back from Mykonos, and the club told him, go away. Like, you need a break. And he said, no. He said, no, I want to go straight back into training. And they said, okay, fine. Like, we trust you. We believe you. That's what you need. You know, like, people react to breakups differently. Some people sit and some people throw themselves into work. Like, you know, mental traumas, like, people react differently. They said, fine, that's what you want to do, and that's how you want to handle it. Okay, go ahead. But then he stunk. And now it's on the manager to say, we did it your way, and it isn't working. You need to listen to us.
Yeah.
But so, if Tuanzebe's fit, like, I'm giving him a shot, because at a certain point, you have to. Like, when, you know, we know that Solskjaer wanted to use him last year. He's a huge fan of him. But every time he was ready to go to him, he got hurt. So, at a certain point you have to say, no, today's the day we're gonna make this change and see how it goes and sink or swim. Newcastle's probably the right team to do it against.
I want to thank that viewer for, like, you know, submitting this idea and everything, but does he want us to? Your Twitter mentions, I mean, you know, thank you for helping us with the content. We hope you continue to harass Polly on Twitter. Thank you for your service. But, like, does he want us to play with nine men, having Bailly and Tuanzebe on the pitch at the same time? Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Click on my mentions, nothing comes up.
Yeah, I think Twitter might be down right now. I'm trying to post something for work.
Yeah.
I was like, did they just suspend my account because I blasted so, like, on this recording that they are not listening to?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos hears you.
We have a couple of questions about the midfield, but before we get into that, as the Busby Babes resident wants to watch Alex Telles card expert, I do want to throw out there the possibility that he starts in this game. Of course, he comes in without having trained with the team that much and going on an international break with Brazil. So he would be, you know, kind of like just thrown into the deep end on this one. But the dude's got pace and the dude's got attacking ability and
free kicks and penalties.
Yeah, man. So he's got that overlapping, you know, potential chemistry to develop with Marcus Rashford. He's got the offensive side of it, but of course, for a team that's conceded as many goals as we have, maybe we don't want to take the risk of putting in a left back that'll get caught out of position more than Luke Shaw was.
I think there's more risk than that. First of all, I mean, he didn't play for Brazil. I don't know if he played in that second game. He didn't start, but he played like 13 minutes in the first one, but he still has to, you know, ride back on a long ass flight from South America to the UK. He probably they played Tuesday, so they probably red-eyed it. Wednesday, you got to acclimatize, get your body ready. to come into a team Saturday. Like, we don't
also
even
pass
know...
a COVID test.
Yeah, also yeah. pass a COVID test. We don't even know. That. We don't even know if he speaks English. Like, Fred doesn't really speak English. Bruno. Mm-hmm. Bruno speaks like 5 languages, which is why him acclimatizing to the team was...
Give him the armband.
Right.
Like, or made it easier and allowed it to be instantaneous. We don't know if Tellez even speaks English. But there's something... I tweeted a long thread about it today, and when Twitter's back up, you can go and look it up, that Shaw has these overlapping and underlapping abilities, and one of the things holding him back is Marcus Rashford and his lack of positioning, and... He really doesn't help Shaw out in any way, shape, or form, and he really doesn't know how to use the overlapping, and it really hurts us. And, like, there's a – I don't know if there's a reason, but it's awfully funny how, you know, Shaw was player of the year for United 2 years ago, and his numbers got way better when Ollie came in after Mourinho. And what did Ollie do? He moved Marcus Rashford to the middle. And then when – Shaw's numbers got even, and he contributed even more offensively once Ollie got the permanent job. And what happened then, like, Ollie was constantly tinkering, but a lot of times used a 2-up-top formation, which kept Rashford off the wing and really gave Shaw more of these attacking responsibilities. And he had, like, 3 assists in the last, like, 8 games. And then last year, when did he play the best football last year? Like January, February, March, when everybody's like, oh, the emergence of Brandon Williams has been pushing Shaw, and all of a sudden we're seeing Shaw play his best football. Well, guess who was injured at that time and wasn't playing on the left wing? So I'm not, you know.
But also, Shaw wasn't playing with lingering injuries as well. He was, by that point, fully fit again.
Right. So there's a chance that, like, it's not exact. It's not that Shaw's been terrible. I mean, they also ask him to do different things. But it, like, there's a chance that, like, Rashford isn't really putting Shaw in a situation where he could succeed. And if that's the case, like, why would it be any different with Tellez?
True.
Because Mate. FIFA, man.
Right, because he's fast and he's fun to play
right.
with.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, of the players in that situation that you want to cater to more, I mean, in that time... 19 goals, you know, and he was, you know, leading from the front partially because he had to, but also, I mean, if you're going to accommodate one of them, wouldn't you pick Rashford
right,
over Luke
but
Shaw?
Then there's, yeah, but then there's also the notion that like, you may say, hey, like, Luke Shaw, like, we don't need you to push forward as much and be a creative force because we have Rashford coming off the left. And, you know, he'll take that burden and you're more of just to be behind him in support defensively. But in those games where teams are sitting deep and you need your fullbacks to come and provide width and overlap, Rashford's not, you know, Rashford doesn't help him there. Like, I posted a clip against Everton where Shaw tries to play a 1-2. Like, he gives it to Rashford. All Rashford has to do is just hit it down, like, towards the touchline. And Shaw's in acres of space, and he first touches it, passes it right back to Shaw, but behind him. So Shaw now has to stop running, turn around, and get the ball. And it's like, well, Marcus, what did that do? Like, all you had to do is put your left boot through it and just hit it somewhere, and Luke Shaw would have been the first one of that ball. Like, the lack of awareness is concerning.
Right. Well, maybe he will time his passes better with a left back that looks as fast as he actually is.
Yeah, right. And so, like, that's also the thing of, like, where I say, like, does Tellez even speak English? Because what did everybody say, like, when Bruno came in? Oh, my God, we finally have a guy who's yelling at players of where to be. Like, I mean, Paul Pogba and Harry Maguire do that too. But all right, if Tellez doesn't speak English, and they're like, well, why isn't Shaw, like, telling Rashford where he wants the ball and where to be? Like, okay, like, maybe Tellez will do that. Maybe. Maybe he's like Shaw and he's more quiet and passive. Maybe he is very aggressive. But if he doesn't speak English, Rashford certainly as hell doesn't speak Portuguese. Because, like, you know, I'm gonna lump English speakers in general, like, we don't tend to learn other languages.
Right.
And Portuguese is certainly not number one on the list of languages we would learn.
Well, right. Maybe an insider on here. I remember watching this, like, Marcus Rashford recently did a Cribs video, and his girlfriend apparently is Italian, and Alex Tellez did play in Italy. so maybe they might speak some Italian.
Yeah, he was on loan at Inter for one season. Which is kind of another situation.
And here's the thing, though. The thing is, we know exactly how Marcus Rashford is spending his time that he's not doing football things.
Right.
He's just not learning other languages.
Yeah.
He's too busy feeding the kids to learn other languages, man.
He is learning the language of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
He's actually feeding the world instead of recording a song about feeding the world.
Yeah. Imagine.
All right. Before we can find out how many more songs. Have I what?
Have you watched Ted Lasso yet?
I have not watched Ted Lasso yet.
There's a line like...
We're going to harass you in our group chat.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah. Nathan's been catching some unfair
Look,
fire
man.
The last few days, but we're going to switch that over to you.
It's on Apple TV. Plus, it's not on the cock.
I'll send you a link. But there's a line where someone says something like, aren't there like too many dogs in America? And they're all like starving and being put down. And he's just like, yeah, but I think a bunch of female singer-songwriters are trying to fight that problem.
Speaking of Ted Lasso, I wish the entire fan base could just be a goldfish for a little bit. And
right? Really that's exactly what I said at the end of the Newcastle game. At the end of the Tottenham game. I was like, I'm going to be a goldfish here.
Be a goldfish.
Anyway.
I should watch that show, Colin. It's pretty freaking good.
Anyway, moving into the midfield against Newcastle, this next quitter question.
We probably should quit.
That's there's a social media idea. The next Twitter question, is Pogba match fit enough to start this Saturday? And I would say that his performances for France probably answer that question pretty well. But, you know, there is the question of reshaping this midfield because our problem, one of the big problems against Tottenham was that the midfield isn't doing enough work right now, and the midfield isn't, you know, providing enough defensive pressure or assistance. And, you know, things went south against Tottenham pretty quickly. But we talked on a previous podcast about how, you know, this might be a positional group where Ollie might want to look to retool things a little bit.
Well, as we continue to be reminded of, Paul Pogba, pretty good when he plays with the entire French national team. There's a reason why that team won a World Cup. I think at this point Pogba has proven that he's probably to the point where he needs to be, where he wants to be. So it's just a matter of are people in Manchester United going to step up around him too and take some of the pressure off of him? Because we always see when he goes and plays for France, when he's playing with a collective of 11 guys who all have their S together, like, he just does his business. And so who's behind him, you know, holding in front of the center backs, who's providing him an outlet on the right wings? Is Bruno freelancing properly or like a chicken with his head cut off? Like, those are all things that tend to go into whether or not Paul Pogba is going to play well. Fitness wise, I think he's probably fine.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of questions here, but like, what I will say is there is a massive amount of outcome bias when it comes to Paul Pogba. He was totally fine. He started one game for France. He was totally fine, which is basically what he's been doing with us. Nothing more. I mean, this particular season, he's been awful. But if you go back, like he looked post-restart, post-lockdown, project restart. Which is when people are still like, oh, he's not doing anything. And it's like, no, he's not scoring, but he's, you know, doing a lot. And that's how he looked against whoever they played on Sunday. Against Croatia, he came on for the last 15 minutes, and he did nothing. He did nothing except one pass from midfield. He puts one pass there, and Luka Dean gets on the end of that pass, makes an incredible play, and then Mbappe has a great finish and it's in the net. And all of a sudden, the reaction is, well, why doesn't Pogba do that with us? Oh, like, he can only his form.
We don't have Kylian Mbappe.
There you go. It's
but those are ambitious balls that he plays all the time.
Right, but if he plays that to Luke Shaw, it's going out for a goal kick or a throw-in. And is that his fault? You know, if Luka Dean screws it up because it's a very difficult pass, would people be being like, wow, did you see Pogba last night? He was incredible. He did one thing last night. It just happened to work. Like, so if you're going to judge him by that standard, then when he tries three or four incredible things over the course of 90 minutes for United and United's players don't pull it off, or even if they do one of those times, but then you can't sit there and be like, yeah, but the rest of the time he did nothing. Like, the rest of the time last night, he did exactly what he does for United. He played in the base of a midfield two and played very simple. He had one moment of brilliance that his French teammates finished off. Like, and that, so it's just outcome bias. Like, everybody's fawning over it because it ended up in the back of the net. When he does the same thing for us, if our players don't put it in the net, then, you know, everybody's so quick to forget it. You know, like, he sprays these passes all the time. The only one that you ever heard people talk about when it didn't end up in the net is the one he sent to Rashford against Tottenham.
Right. And back to what I was talking about earlier with the Talk of the Devils podcast, this expectation that Pogba needs to be an 8 or 9 out of 10 every game for Manchester United, and if he's not, then he shouldn't be playing. Well, where is that narrative for everyone else? You know,
it's the 90 million. Pound price tag.
Who else is being an 8 or 9 out of 10 every game for us?
That's what you're right. I'm like, why doesn't Bruno have to be an 8 or 9 out of 10?
Yeah.
You know, but it's the 90 million pound price tag. Is one. We signed Pogba for that much money, and it's the same thing as Maguire. And, like, Maguire gets judged by his price tag, too, which is ridiculous. Like, it's not United and Leicester agreed a £50 million fee, and Maguire said, no, I'm not making the move unless you make me a world record defender. Like, Maguire would have moved for nothing. Leicester said, you got to make him a world record. Everybody expected him to be Roy Keane versus Juventus every game. And they've turned it into, like, Roy Keane was basically Roy Keane versus Juventus every game. Right? No, he wasn't. Roy Keane had games that he stamped, that he made his impact on. He had games where he wasn't as good.
There are games where he literally stamped people and got sent off.
And then there were games where Roy Keane just did the simple things. Like, you know, I'm playing next to Scholes and Giggs and Beckham. I'm just going to, like, all right, I got the ball. I'm just going to give it to one of them and let them go and do it. And, like, if you watch Pogba Project Restart, that's all he did. He got the ball and he was like, hey, I'm going to give it to Bruno. Like, I'm going to do
it. He was finally in a situation where he was willing to trust all 10 other teammates on his team. But, you know, and this is something that's kind of, you know, reoccurred over the last couple of years, is that it almost seems like the highs and lows of this team are, or of the players on this team, are completely in unison. So if one person is not playing badly, then everyone is playing badly. Or if one person's playing really well, then everyone else is also playing really well. It's like things just click into place like that. But with Pogba, there is always this focus that when things are really, really bad, he is going to take the brunt of that.
Yeah. The thing is, well, first of all, he also played really well when he first arrived, but he wasn't scoring. He hit the woodwork a million times, but he did trust the players. Zlatan, I mean, there are highlight reels of all the ball, of like compilations of all the chances that Pogba put on a plate for Zlatan, and he didn't finish that first season. And he was incredible, and he was still getting shat on. Then you have he plays unbelievable under Solskjaer. But then it gets poor at the end, and it's like, yeah, you pushed him further up the pitch, and when you had Matic and Herrera and Shaw and Young on the way, like, United could get him the ball, and or like Lingard and Rashford and Martial are pressing the hell out of people. They turn the ball over, and it falls to Pogba's feet, and he can quickly spray it to Rashford. And then when those guys get hurt, and you move in, and you have to plug Fred and McTominay in, they couldn't get him the ball. And that caused Pogba to have to drop into midfield and try to progress the ball himself. Except midfield, you only have your three forwards further up the field, like, which it's, you know, and there's four defenders on them. It's harder to get them the ball. And that's the same problem we run into now when we play Fred and Matic or Fred and McTominay, is Bruno drops into midfield to get the ball because they can't get it to Bruno. And it's like, if you can't get the ball to your number 10 in dangerous positions, like, then your number 10 isn't going to be dangerous.
So, next Twitter question, kind of working that into this conversation. Do you guys think that this is a game maybe to bring in Donny van de Beek into this starting midfield three again, or, you know, alongside of maybe Paul Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, or you take out one of Bruno and or Pogba to play a more deeper lying midfield? But yeah, Alex Bold at Alex Bold on Twitter says that
Nathan, DVB answer this because I got to plug in, but I'll answer.
Has to start. Says DVB has to start, but at whose expense and where?
I think he plays at the expense of McTominay or Matic.
Yeah.
I keep saying this. I want to see that midfield. At some point, we just have to recognize the quality that we do have in our top three midfielders. And let's, you know, try and control some possession. Let's actually, like, impose our will. Because right now, we have to take pressure off of the defense. So if we have three midfielders who can actually, like, pass a ball or set up play, I think it makes a lot of sense to run Van de Beek in with Pogba and Bruno. If we are completely obsessed with having somebody cover in front of that back line because of how shaky it's been, then I'm okay with either bringing Bruno or Pogba off of the bench. And I'd like to see, you know, Donny van de Beek in a run. Because as we've said, Pogba and Bruno haven't really covered themselves in glory for the first start of the, you know, the initial part of the season. It's like nobody's proven that they're undroppable at this point. So,
and it's not like we would see a lack of defensive effort from anyone, including Donny van de Beek, just because none of the three of them are, you know, specifically a defensive midfield player. You might see situations where we're caught high up the pitch a few times, but that's kind of the way that we've played under Solskjaer, is where, you know, we try to possess the ball in the opponent's half and we sit on a high line defensively. But we see Donny van de Beek as a really high work rate player. And, you know, Paul Pogba in this deeper role, he might not be as effective offensively, but he is still willing to do that work as well.
Do you guys play FIFA? You guys play FIFA. I could tell you play FIFA. Because yeah, everybody
is
who
it
suggests,
because we mentioned it earlier in this podcast?
It's not even that. It's everybody who suggests playing Van de Beek, Bruno, and Pogba as a three. Play FIFA because it works in FIFA and there is no way it would work in real life. It's just a horrible idea in real life. Because we
saw knock it till you try it.
But we saw what happened. We saw what happened in the first game of the season when they had someone who wasn't protecting the back four. Like, McTominay just didn't stay in position at all, and we gave Crystal Palace a free run at our defense.
But that's Scott McTominay.
That was going to be the other part that I was going to say, is, like, if you're making me choose between Donnie and Scotty, like, sorry, Scott.
But, all right, so you're right. That's Scott McTominay. So can these three players do it? Sure, maybe, but, like, you don't buy a Ferrari to drive at 40 miles an hour. Like, it's just such a misuse of their talents. Like, that's not where they're like, if you're just having Paul Pogba sit in front of the back four, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Like, Paul Pogba's the reason that Pogba plays deeper and not so much as a 10 is because he's really good at defending in his own box. He's a little, like, he needs to be better at, against the press, and he's a little bit of a liability there right now. But he's really good at defending in his own box, which is why Solskjaer can't play him as a 10 because he wants him to be there. But you want him to have that freedom of a number 8 because he's really good at running into opponents' boxes and being a threat there. So you don't want him just sitting in front of your back four. Van de Beek is really good at finding space to receive passes. Like, Bruno and Pogba are great passers. Van de Beek's very good at finding space to receive them. He's a good passer, too, but he's the best at doing that stuff and getting into the box. Like, he's a younger version of Juan Mata. So you don't want him back, like, because his talents are best up front. Bruno is, you know, actually a number 8, not a 10. But the issue is he's been just as careless with the ball as Pogba has this season, and defensively just not nearly as good, and he's been a liability a bit this year. So, like, the issue hasn't been that Pogba's, like, not playing well defensively. Like, I mean, obviously neither one of you read what I wrote about Tottenham, but...
I don't read or write.
Matic has just been going rogue this season. Like, and right. He's been pressing crazily and leaving Pogba back. And, like, it's not that Pogba's, like, been, you know, defensively undisciplined. He's been there, but if you leave him isolated, he's not a defensive midfielder that you can leave isolated like that. Like, where the hell is Matic? So, like, yeah, when you isolate Pogba like that, he's going to look poor. I think the biggest issue here is, I think if anything, United needs to bring in a more defensive midfield. Like, the one person I would say absolutely has to start this game is Fred.
Okay.
And then I ask, does Matic start? Like, do you bring Fred in alongside Matic? Or do you put Pogba next to Fred or Bruno next to Fred? I do think Van de Beek has to start this game. And he's
okay.
Start him as the number 10.
Here's an idea then. And this is me
with a D.
This is me trying to be, you know, tactical thinking Colin. With the absence of Anthony Martial and the unavailability of Edinson Cavani,
here it comes.
Do you think maybe this is a potential game to start Bruno Fernandes as a false nine?
No. I thought you were gonna say the D word?
The diamond? Oh no. God, there no. It is. We've already talked about, like, the diamond.
But the diamond is essentially Bruno. Whoever's operating at the top of the diamond is essentially operating as a false nine. And, like, that's not Bruno's game, because at the end of the day, when you see, like, what Martial does when he plays it, or Firmino when he plays it, at the end of the day, once you get the ball into the attacking third, you got to go and then be your, you know, a striker who gets in, and that Bruno acts like he's allergic to the box. And, like, that's
only we would have signed Dybala.
True. What about maybe in more of a wider role?
Now you're onto something.
So
play the Kai Havertz role that Paulie envisioned.
Putting Mason Greenwood as, you know, a center forward, Rashford on the left, and Bruno as a right winger.
All right, so the only reason I won't say that, Colin, you stole my idea is because Brent, who told me it would be published by now, hasn't published it. But this is exactly what I wrote.
He's a teacher. We will give him some credit there.
If you go into Chorus right now, you can see that I haven't started the article that I said I would. So I have not been in Chorus looking at people's drafts.
And if you go to Chorus, you're not even going to see my name.
Okay. But yeah, interesting. So, but, Bruno Fernandes is a right winger. Polly, have at it.
I documented how United play when Juan Mata is on the right wing. Because he does not play as a right winger. He drops into midfield and helps progress the ball and everything and facilitates from there. So, Mason Greenwood cannot play right wing every week. I mean, he's been found out. Teams know when he gets the ball on the outside of the box, he's going to shoot. You watch him. They four players collapse on him. I mean, Tottenham left Marcus Rashford wide open in the box last week. All Greenwood had to do was tap it forward, and either Rashford's got a clear chance on goal or Davinson Sanchez has to move over and leave Martial wide open, and boom, like, it's a quick cross, and it's a goal. But Greenwood instead, like, doesn't make that pass. And until he makes that pass, teams aren't going to change how they defend him. So he can't play on the right wing. I would start him at center forward this week. Start him at strike because Rashford's not a number nine. So give that to Greenwood. And then there's a couple of questions here. Do you bench Pogba? Because frankly, his performances in the first three games kind of dictate it. And maybe not bench him, but, like, you have PSG coming up, you have Chelsea coming up.
Yeah, frame it as a rest.
Like, yeah, but also, like, hey, like, I need you to know that, like, you know, you got to get your head, you know, you got to get your act together, like, because anybody can be dropped. So do you do that? Do you start Bruno as your number eight next to Fred or Matic? Do you bring Fred in next to Matic so that you know, you have more of a defensive hole like shape because we have been lacking there over the first three games. But Matic has been terrible. I mean, this is the thing that everybody kind of deserves to be dropped. The only midfielder who I would say definitely should not be in the starting 11 against Newcastle is Scott McTominay. But I will say, I know that doesn't come as a surprise, but I will say he should play against either PSG or Chelsea. I don't know which one, but he should play one of those. I think he'd be good in one of the, depending on how Solskjaer wants to play it, like he would be a useful.
It is worth mentioning that Ander Herrera and Thilo Kehrer and Marco Verratti are all going to miss PSG's game against Manchester United. So a chance to maybe bully some young midfielders.
Yeah. Like, I think he would be a useful piece in those games. But, like, Newcastle, not the team for you. So, I wouldn't be opposed to playing Juan Mata off on that right wing in his familiar role. Because, again, Mata's like the cup player, but we're not playing in the Europa League anymore. So if you're not good enough to play in the Premier League, you're certainly not good enough to be playing PSG and Chelsea. So, like, maybe you should play against Newcastle off on that right wing. If you play... So basically what I'm saying is if you start Van de Beek as that 10 and you play either Mata on the right wing or Bruno, because Bruno plays very similar. You play Fred and Matic, say, in midfield. You'd have your Mata or Bruno dropping into midfield to help them progress the ball. But you would still have your player like Van de Beek there to receive the ball. And that would help. And when Mata drops deep, the right back pushes forward and becomes your right wing. And Wan-Bissaka struggles in the buildup. He's bad in the middle third. So if you let him just progress, like just run free and become that right winger, he's not that bad in the final third. But and the responsibility that he'd have as a in the buildup play, that now falls onto your Mata or your Bruno. It would also really benefit United to have one of them there because then they can attack from the right side and guess you can make like a long diagonal run from the left. Guess you can't make that run when you build up with Shaw and everybody on the left side. So I think it would add a lot of dimensions to United's attack if they did that. There's just one issue. Should Bruno Fernandes even be playing or near the team right now?
Why? Because his Portuguese national team member tested positive?
Because he just came out of a what we know is a contaminated bubble.
Hate to see it.
Right, like, so, like, I think this is a valid question, though. Like basically, yes, what is it? What's today? Thursday. Tuesday, Cristiano Ronaldo tests positive for COVID. Wednesday, Weston McKennie test positive. So, and Weston McKennie is not at any international.
He's luckily not in America right now.
Right. Well, he's actually doing pretty bad. But it's knowing what we know that it takes 7-10 days, you know, you could have it for 7-10 days before you become positive.
Yep.
There's reason to believe that Ronaldo, like, contracted this virus, you know, with Juventus, then brought it and spent how many days with Portugal just yupping it up with all of his teammates where he is contagious but hasn't tested positive yet? So,
all right. So
comes back. He doesn't have to quarantine because of UK rules because he was in an elite sporting bubble, a bubble we know that was contaminated. He comes back and he tests negative, but, like, what happens if next week he tests positive? Like, that is far worse than no Bruno for a couple of, and like, it's a problem. We really need him, but it'd be far worse if all of a sudden Martial and Rashford and Greenwood come down with COVID.
Right.
Looking down in the bubble, baby.
At that point, I mean, you would think that it had spread through the rest of the Premier League as well, because, you know, all these other teams have players coming back. And we've already seen COVID popping up a couple times.
But I think they're just going to, like, we know what rules. The almighty dollar. Like, we know, like, baseball is just like, we're going to play through this. The NFL is like, we're going to play through this. I mean, they did Project Restart, and like, congrats to them because they did Project Restart, got it, and there were like no positive tests during that. But you know, now it's back. Like, I think part of what sports being back everywhere has done is it's made people more lax, and that's caused the countries themselves to spike. And so, I think at this point we just know like they're gonna play through. Like, they don't want, they're not gonna risk canceling those TV contracts. They had an international break right now because we need to qualify for the World Cup and we need to qualify for the Euros because we can't call those tournaments off because we're not giving, like, that's UEFA's moneymaker and that's FIFA's moneymaker. And UEFA's not going to sit here and be like, well, wait, like, all of you countries get to run your leagues, like, and your moneymakers, we're going to get ours. And FIFA's saying the same thing.
Haven't they made enough money playing it in Qatar already?
That's the thing, but like, the people that work for FIFA just work in their own world. So I think like at this point, every team is going to have issues and outbreaks, and it's going to be about when do your players get it. And like,
and we're finally going to see that coveted Dylan Levitt, Scott McTominay, and possibly recalled Andreas Pereira midfield we've all been waiting for.
Right. I mean, be thankful Pogba got it before the season. Like,
yeah.
You know, Liverpool, like, they're lucking out now that they got it at the beginning of the season, but right before an international break. So that'll help. But, like, if Bruno comes and he tests positive next week, which is not unlikely.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that means.
That's a problem. That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
So, like, is it worth it to have no Bruno for these few games, like, which is a problem because we very much need him, and have a healthy team, or Bruno for Newcastle and PSG, and then possibly not for another 2 weeks, so he'd miss RB Leipzig, he'd miss Chelsea, he'd miss Arsenal, he'd probably miss Everton, and possibly another player along with him.
Well, I mean, what are the chances that they're going to make us, like, forfeit the game if the entire team tests positive?
It's we might just rules.
We might just be playing the long game, man.
It's literally in the Champions League rules.
Nathan,
contingency. But Nathan, you know
what? He was trying to qualify for another UEFA competition, man. It's not his fault.
Our fans will probably say, like, oh, if we're worried about Fernandez, like, lock him in a room with Maguire.
Nathan, make a medicine check on that D20 you're holding.
Huh? Roll for chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, we already rolled for chaos. We're in it right now.
Yeah. Somebody rolled a one on chaos back in January. I mean,
at the end of the day, I have no effing clue what we should do because, like, maybe we should keep Bruno out and, like, he deserves to be dropped. But, like, Pogba deserves to be dropped too. Matic deserves to be dropped.
Yeah. Like, and
so who knows?
I don't mean to put crazy thoughts into the ether, but maybe because of the international break, if there's enough test popping, we should probably just go ahead and take another international break, but without the international part.
So
I mean, it's crazy the amount of tests that are spreading right now, and it.
But going into another lockdown, like that, I think like that's also been a thing, is that players are just like, I think that's why teams aren't settled defensively too, is like because players are just like mentally not there this year because it's been such a weird year.
Everyone, I think, could definitely use another break anyway, but it doesn't seem
like not a lockdown.
That's
wear and tear on you mentally.
I mean, everyone at every other, you know, realm has already displayed that this is not going to happen.
Yeah, but if you're doing anything outside of domestic leagues, like as much as it would be detrimental to go into a lockdown, it's unfortunately going to be a reality that they're going to put themselves into. Because if it's not the leagues that can make the decision, it's going to be the countries.
And right, we have seen countries locked down because their countries' governments have actually been like, no, you're not doing this.
Wouldn't
that be nice?
Watch one German national team player pop a test, like, you're done.
Germany's got fans in the stands.
Yeah, because they've actually, like, treated this thing seriously.
It's coming back in Germany, too.
Yeah, and so they're going to do the same thing again.
One thing is for sure, we will definitely see. So
meanwhile, we have like 90,000 fans in University of Georgia Stadium.
We're going to be tuned in on the cock for all of it. So we are at over an hour now. So we are going to end this podcast here. Thank you to all the Twitter followers that sent us questions.
Polly has shown up.
I don't know if we read out your Twitter handles or anything, but I hope we did and give you the recognition you deserve. But, you know, we'll get the account to go back and like those or whatever. So, yeah, that
run the
do
account,
it for us.
That's you to do it.
Right, that's on me. thanks for tuning in. I've been Colin.
I've been Nathan.
Auf Wiedersehen.